PCJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Pehong.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome again to another edition of your Sunday program, Happy Station, from PCJ Radio International. Very nice to have you with us on this terribly terrible rainy day. And it just seems not to be letting up at the least. And as you're probably aware, we had a holiday this past week. It's a holiday that happens every year. It's called Double Ten. And Double Ten is, you can say, Taiwan's National Day. And this year, unfortunately, it fell on a very strange day, which is a Wednesday, which, of course, is in the middle of the week. Now, I suppose, like many other people out there, when you have a holiday that falls in the middle of the week, it's not exactly a favorite amongst people, because if it's a Monday or a Friday, well, you actually end up having a long weekend. But this year, it was in the middle of the week. But, you know, some people actually got around it, because on Monday and Tuesday, you can tell that people took the extra 2 days off, certainly because of the traffic. So it's very easy to tell. Very, very easy to tell. And then, of course, things sort of got back to normal. You know, Thursday. So, well, good on them. That's something I will say on that. Anyway, nice to have you with us today. We're going to try to play as much music as possible on the program and a few other things as well. But let's begin with Kylie Minogue. This is an album that she recorded at the Abbey Road Studios in London. And the album is called The Abbey Road Sessions. It features, of course, a full orchestra with many of her very well-known songs. Here she is with one of her songs from many, many, many years ago, from the 1980s, in fact. I believe it, if not one of her early hits, Kylie Minogue with a full orchestra and The Locomotion.
Come on, baby.
Yes, Kylie Minogue with one of her early hits from the 1980s, The Locomotion, but they're performed with a full orchestra from the album. Here it is, the Abbey Road Sessions, Kylie. All right. You are listening to Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. We have something today on the program that we have been holding back for a while. Now, a number of months ago, we ran a program from a series called The Golden Windmill Contest. Now, this was a contest that was held by Radio Nederland in the early 1970s. And the Golden Windmill Contest was, well, was that first, it's a contest, and it's to win a gold prize, or the other prize, of course, that came along with it, like silver and second prize and third prize, of well-known Dutch plays and stories that were turned into plays. We brought you one a few months ago, and some of you really enjoyed that, and were asking if we can bring another one. Well, let's do that today, then. This one is called An Honorable Mention, Emrys in the Underworld, a radio play by Paul Van Hale. This program was broadcast on November the 13th, 1971.
Is that you again, Erasmus?
Your Honor, may I have a few words with you?
You were here just a few minutes ago.
Minos, if it please Your Honor, I have a petition.
Like the music, Erasmus?
Ah, that's by Jacobo Brecht. He taught me what music I know.
Correct.
Obrecht always had a melancholy effect on me.
Well, what do you wish to see me about this time, Erasmus?
I would like to petition for my release.
Are you complaining about the heating system again?
No, sir. Hot as it is, I prefer it to the stoves of Germany.
Your housekeeper?
No, as housekeepers go, she's as good as any in Hades.
The neighbours?
If I could, I would choose others, but all I want now, sir, is my release.
What time do you make it?
It's December by my watch.
You know very well we don't count months down here. What's the other hand say?
1970.
I'm referring to the century hand, stupid.
No, it is still the 20th, going on the 21st.
You were sentenced to 500 years upstairs time, I believe. Now, let me see. Here's a long note on your case, Erasmus. It all comes back to me now. You were one of those Christians who were denied the usual judgment after death because you could not make a stand on certain religious matters. Your heaven, hell, or purgatory were denied you.
I was sent to the underworld first. I'll be judged after serving my sentence here.
Poetic justice, that. Since you spent more time in Olympus with Jupiter than you did in the company of your god, it seems to be a fitting punishment. Now, let's see. Your last entry in the Book of Life was on page 1536. You've been here
434 years.
Just a shade under 4.5 hours, our time. For the last hour or so, you've approached the bench every 10 minutes. Can't you control yourself?
I've been among the shades here 4 1/3 centuries. That's a big piece out of anybody's eternity.
Oh, come, come. Every 10 minutes is just too much. But let's not quibble. Time is so relative. What have you done to deserve special consideration?
Oh, well, many say that I have written the best Latin since Cicero.
And for this you want time off, yes?
And I, single-handed, rescued classical Greek from barbarous vulgarity and restored it to something approaching its pristine beauty.
Anything else?
I may also claim to have exerted some influence on higher education.
Have you had a good look at higher education, as you call it, lately?
I have also done some writing.
To what purpose? Who reads Erasmus anymore?
Please, Minos, I can't get my favorite burgundy here, and with my delicate digestion, it's a necessity, not a luxury. And that fish factory. I can't stand the smell of fish, you know. Also, Your Honor, why must I eat fish and keep those rigorous fasts? They don't do that up there anymore, I've heard.
Funny how quickly idealistic arguments reduce themselves to a matter of creature comfort, personal advantage, or both. I'll tell you what I'll do, Erasmus. Tell you what I'll do for you.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'll grant your request for a hearing. You may call one witness who has known you very well.
I call up St. Thomas More.
We recognize no saints down here. And you may call him down. Down, you understand. This is the underworld.
I call Sir Thomas More. Then, saint or plain sir, he easily towers over all Englishmen by a head.
And I will call down another sometime Augustinian monk.
Not Luther.
Why not Luther?
We have never met.
My friend Erasmus!
Sir Thomas More, witness for the defense.
Ah, how good to see you again, my sweet More.
Erasmus, dearer to me than my own eyes.
Oh, Erasmus, we meet at last.
And Martin Luther, witness for the prosecution. Now, you two shades must remember that you are witnesses in my court. You are here to testify in the matter of the petition of Desiderius Erasmus of Rotterdam. You will speak only when spoken to. You will avoid outbursts of any kind. I insist on decorum. This is no earthly court, you know. Now, let's get going. We don't have all the time in the underworld.
Tell him, friend More, that I meant well. That in Virgil's words I followed, to the best of my ability, the path fortune prepared for me.
St. Paul is a better guide for a Christian.
Silence, Luther.
My dear More, tell the judge that I had no taste for quarrel and bloodshed.
Your Honor, my friend Erasmus is a gentle soul who seeks the middle way.
We don't have souls here, More, only shades.
That is the way of cowards.
Luther, while I search the record, will you begin your testimony?
Your Honor, the record speaks plainly enough. This sinking codfish was born without a backbone. Because he would neither swim with nor against the tide, he was thrown up on the beach, and he lay there rotting on the shore because he would make no effort to get back into the sea.
Brother Martin, I detest fish. Even the word nauseates me.
Even the word brother nauseates me.
Oh, friend Martin, then friend or brother, are they not the same?
Whose friend are you? That seems to be the question at issue.
The court requests that you grant Erasmus this indulgence to call you friend.
Indulgence? You know how I feel about indulgences.
Silence. I've tried to search the record out, but it's hopeless. I never saw such a tangled mess. Charges, countercharges, abuse heaped on abuse. I don't understand you Christians. You hate each other and are ready to kill each other in the name of religion.
Hatred and inhumanity defy all logic. Christians do not hate because of their religion, but in spite of it.
Let us return to the issue. Erasmus took no stand. This is the heart of the Erasmus question.
Friend Martin, I have told you, a literary man.
Oh.
I do not claim to be a theologian. I had no stomach for your quarrels.
Erasmus, the record says you translated the Bible. Do you call this a purely literary work?
I admit that there is a connection with theology here, tenuous as it may be. You must also admit that to render the Greek into Latin required some literary skill.
You can't sidestep your responsibility by quibbling over words. You are a biblical scholar. Your fame as the world's greatest scholar demanded that you make a stand. But did you speak out?
Frankly, I did not want to seem to sanction the quarrels of either side. I feared that the intemperance of both factions would lead to violence and would prove disastrous to learning.
Learning? You mere curd of ass's milk.
Friend Martin, I can truthfully state that you had my sympathy.
Sympathy?
Instead of leading the fray as I could have, I stood naked and unarmed between the javelins of two angry foes.
You owed me your public support.
I was neither your advocate nor your judge. I would not presume then, nor do I now presume, to judge your heart or condemn your actions.
My friend Luther, Erasmus wished to further the cause of mankind without injury to anybody.
Oh, jellyfish.
I did not have the time to read all of your arguments, friend Martin.
Or answer my first letter. The greatest mind of the century had no time to answer the letter of a simple peasant. You could not stoop to take notice of a humble fellow Augustinian monk.
The demands on my time were enormous. I do not recall the letter you refer to. I wrote you a number of times, but you did not seem to need my advice.
You lit the torch, then disappeared behind your books.
Erasmus!
Your Honor.
This is a serious charge. Did you expect to start a conflagration, then ignore it? Couldn't you see the consequences?
I have never claimed to be a prophet. Perfect vision is the prerogative of hindsight.
How plead you on this matter of taking a stand?
It is not a simple question of being guilty or not guilty. As I see it, taking a stand for or against Martin was not my business.
A man must at some point say, here I stand. I cannot do otherwise.
He must, as it were, place his head on the block.
I can't accept such a simplistic conclusion.
You stirred the world up with that silly little book about fools, then retreated into your study.
There's quite a bit about that little book of yours in the record. In fact, I understand that you are remembered almost exclusively as the author of The Praise of Folly.
It was a trifling thing. I wrote it in a week at friend Moore's house.
Thomas, I would like to have some passages from it read into the testimony. Would you take the part of Folly?
Gladly.
Must I remain for this ludicrous performance?
If you don't, I'll take back your safe conduct pass through Rome.
Oh. I recall the delight with which we heard Erasmus read parts of it in my house when it was written. Your Honor, I heartily recommend this magnificent trifle.
Please begin.
Just a moment. As soon as I get my wig on...
Oh, come in, whoever you are, but be silent.
Shut up yourself, you old cretin.
You insolent wench.
Now, is that nice?
Who is this Xantippe?
Minos assigned my earthly housekeeper, Margaret, to me here in Hades.
Sycorax, we have important business to transact.
My master calls me all sorts of names, so go ahead. Call me whatever you like. I bought you some refreshments.
I didn't call you.
Here's your wine.
Shall I proceed playing Folly?
Nice job of casting, Sir Thomas. From what my master tells me, you married her. Here's your wine.
Be silent, Loquax. Do not all who marry pay court to Folly?
Wine, Your Honor.
No. Oh, holy jumping Jupiter!
Bebex, what did you serve us?
In Germany, this might pass as Wasser. Dishwater.
Don't you appreciate the wine?
That's not wine, Mendax.
What will you call me today? Yesterday it was Huzzy Minx, my dear. Why don't you quote from the letter you wrote? Oh, that rhymes. The letter when you fired me in 34. In your finest Latin, you call me Furex, Rapex, Bibex. Asinus, Asinorum, Mosca, Musca, Musculus, Musculorum.
I am being maligned. I never used such dreadful Latin. And you didn't learn those pronunciations in my house. Why don't you jump into the Styx?
Woman, would you tell the court what you did to the wine before Jupiter strikes you dumb like the goddess Muta?
I wanted to see if theologians have stomachs.
You know very well I don't consider myself a theologian.
You don't have much of a stomach either, Hercules. Oh. What with my cooking? Anyway, to answer your question, I poured a little soapy water into the wine.
Brazen woman, oh, my stomach.
Oh, you may have the heart of a Catholic, but your stomach is something else. What with your taste for fish and fasting?
You see, Erasmus, I had my reasons for assigning her to you here.
Minus, you are diabolical.
You might say that is my profession. There should be some justice, at least poetic justice, in this underworld. I figured assigning her to you here was worth 5 hours our time, 500 years Earth time, especially after you got rid of her the way you did. It wasn't very nice of you to leave a note in an envelope and go off on one of your extended trips. By the way, you did owe her some money, didn't you?
I fed her for 12 years, provided her with a roof over her head, and gave her the privilege of hearing the finest Latin spoken.
Is she gone?
Not farther than I can hear.
Come in. Why, Julius, what brings you here?
Margaret told me I was wanted here. She said something about some special guests. Who in hell is this?
I am not in hell. I'm a resident of the Renaissance section of Hades.
This is my neighbor, Julius II, sometime Pontifex Maximus.
We have met.
Julius, we were just about to hear a bit of friend Erasmus's folly.
Oh, for a quiet scholar, you made a lot of noise, Erasmus.
I don't seem to recognize that gentleman standing over there.
You might call him an architect.
Ha! Too bad I didn't know about him. I could have used another architect in building my new St. Peter's. Poor Michelangelo, he really had his hands full. And I must admit I drove him pretty hard.
You might say I helped redesign St. Peter's.
I beg your pardon?
It was a bit after your day. St. Peter's hasn't been the same since.
You don't say.
And Julius II was sent to the underworld by a certain St. Peter, who didn't recognize him because of his warlike appearance. At least that's what the record says. He came before Erasmus. He's something of a permanent fixture around here.
Your Honor, may I continue with the role of folly?
Sir Thomas, I understand she has ass's ears. Where are they?
I've been trying to get this contraption over my head, but it keeps slipping.
The wig?
No, my head.
Well, let's have more folly. Or if you prefer, let's have folly more.
I'll open the book at random. Any place is as good as any other.
It's all equally silly.
Let us begin here. Why are fools in such demand? Rulers can neither drink nor eat nor go anywhere without them. Why? Fools are precious to the prince because whereas wise men give advice that's often hard to take, fools flatter and blind and make the ruler think he is wise.
Depends on the ruler. Some may not be subject to flattery, you know.
Quiet, Julius. Read on, Sir Thomas.
Folly says that without her, there would be no progress. There would be no need for judges, teachers, reformers. In short, there would be no world. Rid the world of fools, and who would be left?
Not even Erasmus.
Behold the philosophers, the seekers after truth, the members of the learned professions. In short, all those who never doubt in the least that they have the secret of the universe between their fingers, as if they had dropped into the council of the gods. While all the time, nature laughs at them and their blind conjectures and confounds their pride. Do not those who have the least knowledge profess loudest that they have it all? And do not those who are most ignorant often arrogate to themselves the office of teaching others?
One of my illustrious predecessors in the chair of Peter Gregory by name said, let not those who are unlearned presume to teach.
That was in more barbarous times. Civilization has made considerable advances since then.
As Erasmus himself says, a fool speaks of foolish things, and so he speaks in his book of fools. He should have written a book in praise of wisdom.
Oh, that would impose a frightful limitation on the work. As Solomon said, of fools there is no end, but where will you find a wise man?
Nevertheless, it seems that the charges against the praise of folly are many and serious. Sir Thomas, can you refute them?
I shall undertake no defense of the work, as it needs no defense. It has been favorably received and highly praised by the most competent of men. Has it not, Julius?
Indeed it has. I was much amused by it. I was pleased to see that Erasmus included himself in it as well as everybody else. I am much more concerned about some other things that Erasmus fished out of his inkpot. Many anonymous books and pamphlets that touched off a raging fire.
There was a wonderfully effective satire against some pope or other.
I believe we stand in his presence.
I have some questions to ask about a certain anonymous dialogue called Julius Excluded from Heaven.
The record is silent on it.
That's because Erasmus will not admit his authorship, though the world knows this scurrilous piece came from him.
I'd like to have some of it in the record of these proceedings. Julius, you can play yourself.
That's his favorite role.
Who else do we need?
St. Peter.
The part is yours, Luther.
Oh.
Erasmus, provide us with the setting.
I'll do as well as I can. It seems that Julius II attempted to enter paradise after his death, but he experienced some difficulty. St. Peter, I understand, didn't recognize him.
Julius, begin.
Open the gates, I say, Peter.
Who are you? What do you want here?
Do you not see my triple crown?
I don't recognize the crown. No heathen king ever wore such a crown.
Enough of this. I am Julius II, Pontifex Maximus.
If you are three times Maximus, even if you are Mercury, you can't come in until you're Optimus, too.
You are an unlettered fisherman. I am a fisher of men.
I see only a general with bloody armor.
Minos, this is degrading. Must I continue?
No interruptions. Please go on.
You must show your merits first. Nobody gets admitted without merits.
What do you mean by merits?
Man is saved by faith alone.
Friend Luther, that is not in the text. Will you refrain from proselytizing?
Behave yourself, Luther, or I'll throw an inkpot at you.
Julius, have you given good example?
I have subdued my enemies.
Have you taught true doctrine?
I have been too busy fighting. There are monks to teach doctrine.
Have you lived a holy life?
I have been a man of action.
What good did you do?
I raised revenues. I annexed Bologna to the Holy See. I drove the French out of Italy. I left my mark on Rome. I gave Michelangelo work to do. Without me, what would he have done with his talents? I laid plans for the new St. Peter's. I worked out a system of raising funds for this great project through the granting of alms for indulgences.
We cannot respect a man whom we know to be worthless.
He who would traffic in the sale of indulgences...
Martin, stick to the text.
Behold, I am born on a golden chair. I look like a leader. You should have seen me at Bologna and at Rome after the war with Venice. Scipio and Caesar were nothing but the sight of me.
Enough, enough. I look at a worldly tyrant, a disgrace to the church.
Mere envy.
Oh, insolent wretch. Dare you compare your glory with mine?
Enough. Enough of this, Minos.
Very well. Sir Thomas, what do you say about the authorship?
Your Honor, I have never been interested in discovering the name of the author, although I have heard different views.
What do you say? Did he write it?
Suppose he did. Does he not have the right to express his opposition to war and to warrior popes?
Santa Maria!
The problem is simply this. Erasmus lacked the courage to admit publicly that he wrote this devastating satire. Is not the basic issue his unwillingness to stand up and be counted?
It would seem to me that he took a very strong stand here.
But did he acknowledge this work? to be his without equivocation.
A man must exercise the virtue of prudence.
Is that how you lost your head?
Erasmus, what say you in your defense?
I am, and have been, accused of all things. Luther himself has accused me of not believing in God, of being an enemy of Christianity. Faction, gentlemen, spares none, and calumny sticks and cannot be washed off. I have tried, quietly, to correct abuses, and I have disapproved of excesses by all sides. I have begged both sides to tolerate their opponents and to leave each man to his own conscience.
Well, all of the evidence seems to be in. Do you wish to make a final statement?
I speak not for myself or my own reputation. I fear for posterity. May Christ's dove of peace, or at least Minerva's owl of wisdom, come among men.
Every man, naturally, thinks his own case fair. All men, I grant, cannot do all things. Nevertheless, Erasmus, I would say that you should have learnt a bit more thoroughly the meaning of a saying attributed to Epictetus. Sustain and abstain.
I know it well. It is in my published collection of proverbs.
Precisely. You know it well, but did you practice it? You learned perfectly how to abstain, but did you learn equally well how to sustain? To sustain your convictions more vigorously?
Your Honor, what is the verdict?
You must remain in the underworld for the duration of your sentence.
He who drinks the wine must also drink the dregs.
But Erasmus, I'll offer you one condition. You may gain your release earlier if you can persuade your sometime patron and King of England to write a defense of the marriage bond. Eh, Sir Thomas?
I like that well, Minos. Henry VIII, defender of the marriage vow.
Every man is made a fool through his own wisdom.
Request for a number of you that requested to hear another radio drama from Radio Nederland. We hope you enjoyed that one. If you listen carefully, even though there are some Dutch actors in that production, there's also some other voices actually who are Radio Netherlands presenters who took part in it. Now, can you figure out who they are? I'm not going to tell you. If you do know what they are, you can send us an email or check us out on Facebook, and I will verify with you whether or not that is the case. All right. Time for music now again. Let's take a listen to Natalie Cole from her Grammy Award-winning album, Unforgettable with Love, Natalie Cole, that featured the hit Unforgettable. That was a duet between her and her father, Nat King Cole. Well, it wasn't a new... Well, basically, they took his vocals from his original track and mixed them together, which at the time was actually a groundbreaking technology. We're not going to listen to that one. However, we are going to listen to three very well-known Nat King Cole songs, a medley that she did. The songs are, for sentimental reasons, Tenderly and Autumn Leaves, here on Happy Station from PCJ Radio International.
I love you for sentimental reasons. I hope you do believe me. I'll give you my The trembling trees embrace the breeze tenderly. Then you and I came wandering by and lost in the sand. Were we? The shore was kissed by sea and mist. I can't forget how two hearts met breathlessly. Your arms open wide and close. Summer kisses, the sunburned hands I used to hold. Since you went away, the days grow long, and soon I'll hear old winter song. But I miss you most of all.
Natalie Cole singing a medley of her father's most favorite songs, For Sentimental Reasons, Tenderly and Autumn Leaves. You know what's really funny? I mean, we are only the month of October, right? It's only October. I mean, we just finished September. We're going into fall, or some places it actually may be fall already. But I just couldn't believe my ears on Wednesday. And I couldn't believe my eyes. In fact, I couldn't believe it that I even took a double take and still don't believe it. You want to know what that is? Well, I actually saw a place putting up Christmas decorations and had already begun playing Christmas music. So today, for the remainder of the program, we're going to feature Christmas songs, some of my personal favorites. No, actually, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put you through that just yet. My point in saying that was October. I mean, we're now the middle of October, and some people and some places are already putting up Christmas decorations, and playing Christmas music. You've got to be kidding. I literally was godsmacked. I just couldn't believe it. I mean, why can't they just wait for at least 6 weeks more before we start doing all of that? Really? Oy, oy, oy. Anyway, let's have another song not related to Christmas, and I promise we won't have any Christmas songs until next week, where we feature an entire Happy Station show of pre-Christmas music. That's also a joke, by the way. I'm not going to put you through that. Instead, let's now have a little bit of Elvis Presley singing a song by Simon and Garfunkel called Bridge Over Troubled Water.
When you're weary, feeling small, when tears are in your eyes, I will dry them all. I'm on your side. Oh, I will lay me down.
by. Your time has come to shine. All your dreams are on their way. See how they shine. Oh, if you need a friend, I'm saying right. Yeah, like a bridge over troubled water. I will lead your mind like a bridge over troubled water. I will lead your mind.
Elvis Presley singing a song made famous by Simon and Garfunkel, Bridge Over Troubled Waters. One of actually my favorite songs by them. Alrighty, we are nearly out of time. And today we are going to leave you with the incredible Carmen McRae. And this is from an album called Carmen McRae Sings Lover Man and Other Billie Holiday Classics. So yes, actually, it's songs made famous by Billie Holiday. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. What is the name? Oh, I forgot. The name of the song, by the way, is Yesterday's. Not Yesterday by Paul McCartney, but Yesterday's. All right. Until next time, friends, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well, saying so long, au revoir, auf Wiedersehen, adios, amigos, and sayonara.
Yesterday's, yesterday's, days I knew as happy, sweet, sequestered days. Golden days.
mind. I looked around and truth was mine. Joyous, free, and flaming life for sin.